Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. Welcome. Welcome, beautiful souls. Always good to connect with you in this sacred space, this sacred community that is all about embracing all of who we are and healing, growing, and evolving spiritually, consciously. Today, we have the good pleasure of having a special presentation about the Mazatec lineage. We are going to be exploring the holy children, the little teachers. You know them and love them. And if you don't, you'll learn to love them. They are the sacred psilocybin mushrooms. We have so much gratitude to really bestow and share with Maria Sabina, who is really the first source of education, albeit not necessarily consciously the way things went with R. Gordon Wasson, the American former stockbroker who went to Mexico and learned about psilocybin mushrooms. Wasn't the most honest way to go about it, but Maria Sabina, with an open heart, shared so much about these precious teachers. And that's really the first leakage on a grand scale that came into our Western understanding when R. Gordon Wasson was publishing this major expose, this article. And I guess we should also add credit or blame to his wife, who was Russian, who was already aware of psilocybin containing mushrooms and other mushroom species from her life in Russia. So this curiosity and this fascination was there. And once he experienced sacred mushroom journeys, it kind of exploded from there. So as you probably know, chemical analyses were done and they found out that the magic in magic mushrooms came from psilocybin, which gets turned into psilocin in our bodies. And that's the active ingredient that leads to these amazing journeys, this visual or auditory or physical trip, if you will. So I'm super excited to be able to shine some light on the cultural heritage behind psilocybin mushrooms. As many of you know, I facilitate retreats with psilocybin truffles in the Netherlands. Truffles are a little different in that they're the underground portion, and they're legal in Holland, where we conduct our retreats. And so I think it's really useful for us to know, you know, how did the whole world get excited? Why are we at Conscious Evolution Retreats facilitating these retreats as a sacred ceremony, as a true ritual, as a rite of passage? And there's no one that I know who is better to share some of this history and this lineage with us than Sergio Rodriguez Castillo. He's been featured before with us in The Ultimate Guide to Safe Psychedelic Preparation and The Alchemy of the Soul Apprenticeship. And you may have seen him in the Psychedelic Assisted Therapy Global Summit. So he's been making the rounds as well as other podcasts and other training programs. So today, what we'll be doing is we have a special session. This is 90 minutes. Usually we meet for an hour. Today we have an hour and a half. That way Sergio can share a little bit about the magic of this lineage, his own experiences as a psychotherapist, as a psychedelic facilitator, as well as his amazing pilgrimage that he leads in Mexico. So if you've got questions already, just note them down. I don't want you to miss out. Write them down because, you know, sometimes you can forget. Don't put them in the chat just yet because we're going to have a special section for Q&A. You'll be able to unmute. You can come on camera and ask Sergio your questions directly. But first and foremost, we are going to let him share. And I think this is going to be a real treat for all of us. So thank you all for being here. If you're watching on the replay, I know you're going to enjoy it as well. Welcome, welcome. So Sergio Rodriguez Castillo, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Take it away.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you all for being here from wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, because I know you're in different places of the world. That's one of the wonders of the modern technology. So happy to be here. So happy to be here. And Wandera just gave a wonderful introduction. So that's a great start. I also understand, correct me, Wandera, if this is not true, that everyone here is more or less familiar with the mushrooms tradition or the psychedelic tradition, just to orient myself.
I would say that most people have heard me or you or many of us, but there are some new people who are exploring mushrooms for the first time.
Got it. Okay. So for everyone, but especially for those of you that are new, please feel free to ask when we go into the question and answers part, even if you think, oh, maybe that's a too beginner question. There are never such a thing. I've known many times that we talk about beginner's mind, right? Sometimes the beginners have the best questions because they are the ones that think, yes, and say, I've never thought about that. So feel free, feel welcome to ask any question that may come your way. Worst case scenario, I avoid it. And because I'm a psychotherapist, I'll turn it back to you and say, well, I wonder why you asked that question, right? Just kidding. I'll do my best to try to answer your questions. So 45 minutes, right? I can get very excited and keep talking for forever, but we have 45 minutes before we go into questions and answers.
Yes. And we, of course, want to hear about the pilgrimage. So
yes. Yes. Okay. So I'm putting a timer here just to keep me more or less on check. So again, thank you for being here. Very happy to be here. The first thing that you probably may already suspecting is I'm not a shaman. I'm a psychotherapist. I was born in Mexico. I'm going to talk a little bit about me, only a little bit. I was born in Mexico, but I was educated in Western tradition, went to Western schools, Catholic, so on and so forth. So just to be very clear, I'm not a shaman and I don't, or a curandero, I don't present myself as such. It would be a terrible mistake to try to do so. I've been working both as psychotherapist and I've been an apprentice of different shamans, curanderos. The word shaman is always tricky. I won't go into that, but it always kind of give me the heebie-jeebies a little bit. But I'll use it because it's the general word that we all use. I work my teachers in Oaxaca, when I call them shamans, they just say, shh, I'm a curandero, I'm a curandera. No, I'm not a shaman. What is that? But we know what it means, and we know the umbrella that it tries to cover. So like I was saying, I've been trained for over 10 years by different curanderos, one in particular for many, many years until she passed. And then as such, I've been in a relationship with people in Huautla for many years. So just to say that, because I'm a Westerner, because I don't know all of you, but I imagine that if not all, many of you would consider yourself Western educated at least. I always like to start with just, I won't spend too much time on this, but just an awareness about these words that we hear a lot, right? Appropriation, appreciation, and inspiration. Three words that are closely connected, but it's important to dismiss. And again, to keep in mind. And again, I won't go into the details of them, but if you want us to further explore any of them, feel free to ask questions about. So appropriation, as the word suggests, is about taking something. It's about, without asking, without caring, without any interest in what the person does with it or how they use, you say, oh, I like this, I'm gonna take it. This is a clear child of colonization, right? Colonization was about taking. They didn't care about anything, they just liked something, whether it was the riches, whether it was the land, whether it was the people, freedom, anything they liked, they took. So that's why appropriation is such a loaded word for very good reasons. So I want you to keep in mind. Now, let me say this: appropriation doesn't even work. In a conference, one teacher gave this example, and I really like it, so I'm using it myself. He said, appropriation is kind of stealing Michael Jordan shoes, sneakers, and saying, oh, now I'm going to play like Michael Jordan because I have his sneakers, right? It's crazy. So when people appropriate, they use something, they take from another tradition without the knowledge, without the understanding and the preparation, you just make everybody look silly. So we don't want to talk about that, but we have to be very aware of it because we're talking about the mushroom, and I'll be talking about a very specific tradition. So that's appropriation. Appreciation refers to celebrating, right? Celebrating someone else, something that someone else has, celebrating a culture, celebrating a tradition. They may look very similar, but the idea is that you're celebrating what they do, and you take the time to understand what is it about that tradition. And inspiration, which is what I hope we do the most, obviously not appropriation. Inspiration has to do with developing your own rites, your own ceremonies, your own practices, inspired on the practices of others. So to give you an example, you learn that many traditions, for sure in the Mazatec, they do cleansing at the beginning of a ceremony. The first act is cleansing, whether it is with branches, whether it is with an egg, whether it is with smoke, whatever it is. Okay, so you understand the value of cleansing, and you understand why we do it and what's behind it and so on and so forth. So then you say, how can I introduce a cleansing practice in my own, in the work that I do? And again, we could get into the detail, but I'm using that just as an example that's inspiration, is figuring out based on my own understanding, based on my own practice and on my own tradition. I'll say some more about that later. We develop our own practice. And again, they're very closely connected, but I wanted to make that distinction because, as we know, the West has a very bad history of appropriating stuff. And particularly when it comes to magic or sacred medicine, sacred plants, we have a tradition of misusing. If any of you were there at the last MAPS conference in Denver, it was taken over at the end by a group of indigenous people that were complaining. And one of the elders there said something that really shook me, right, in a way. He said, you know what, every single sacred plant that the West has taken, they have misused, and as a result it has caused damage. Tobacco is a sacred plant, you misuse it and it caused damage, right? Cannabis is a sacred plant, you misuse it and it caused damage. Opium is a sacred plant, and we could go on and on, right? We're still wondering what's going to happen with the sacred mushrooms as they find their way into the Western world. So again, with this idea that appropriation doesn't work, Michael Jordan sneakers, and it is potentially harmful, and we need to be mindful of this. Now, when I know you know all of this, I don't think I'm saying anything that say, oh my God, I never heard that before. I'm sure you know all of this. What I want you to do by revisiting this is to start asking yourself, no judgment, curiosity, how does this apply to me? When I'm using something from another tradition, have I taken the time to study that tradition? Do I understand why they use it, how they use it? Why do I feel drawn to using this particular tool or this particular ceremony or this particular song? Sometimes, and again, only you know that, sometimes we do it because, let's face it, it kind of looks cool. If I come here wearing certain clothes that look very traditional or a big necklace that shows something or a big band, say, oh my God, this guy's, it looks pretty cool most of the time. And it's amazing when the one using it, again, knows what he or she, they are doing with it. But it's something to ask ourselves, why do I want to use this? What is inspiring me to do this? Can I ask permission? Is this something that I can ask permission to some elders, to some holders of the tradition to use? Am I honoring what I'm doing? right? Am I trying in whatever way, trying to honor one of these basic, one of the basic traditions from shamanic cultures is reciprocity. So am I being reciprocal? Is there a way in which I'm trying to give? Because if you think about it, everything in the natural world is about reciprocity. Even breathing, right? We breathe CO2 and then the plants take that and give us back oxygen. So everything is about balance, it's about reciprocity. So anyway, I wanted to start with that because I think it's important to get there. And now let's jump in. And again, please, it's kind of weird for me. I kind of usually go like, if there are questions, I answer that. But we, Andrea and I agree that we're going to keep the questions to the end. But please write those questions down if you have them. Thank you, Jess, for the heart. So we're going to jump into, again, I'm already have only half an hour left, so you're going to hear me kind of throw too much information at you. That's my desire, to give you as much as I can in very little time. But if it feels overwhelming, you can always say, hey, please slow down, and I'll do my best to slow down. So we're going to jump right into talking about the Mazatec. And the other thing that I want to say is that we have to be careful, because when we're talking about another culture from another cosmology, all translations are mistakes. It's almost impossible for us Westerners to really understand how do they see the mushrooms? How do they work with the holy children? I remember in my first few trips to Oaxaca, I was going to one of the healers and asking questions. And then I would ask a question and then I would get an answer and say, probably I didn't understand myself. Let me try again. And I will ask the same question again. And sometimes even three times, that's how slow I am. And after three times, I realized, you know what? No, they're understanding my question. By their answer doesn't make sense to my worldview. Because I'm thinking about, the example, right? I was thinking back then as the mushrooms as a tool, right? As something that we use closer to the Western idea of medication. Right? So how would you use the mushroom for someone that has anxiety? And they would say, well, you have to have a conversation with the mushrooms. Yeah. But you as the healer, how would you? And then I realized, no, they don't see the mushrooms at that. At some point, one of the teachers told me, the mushrooms are not tools. He didn't use that word. They're not objects. They're beings. You have to develop a relationship with the mushrooms. You have to talk to the mushroom. You have to engage to the mushroom. And more than anything, you have to listen to the mushrooms. As you would, I use the metaphor, and I think it's a good one, but it's like going to visit a guru in India, right? Or anywhere for that matter, but gurus are traditionally from India. You go to a guru, you wouldn't see him or her, I don't know if they would use the them, but let's say them as a tool. You will be respectful and bow before the guru and ask the question with all due respect and wait for an answer and understand that there's a relationship happening. When we see the little children, which is one of the and Andrea mentioned it, when we talk about the mushrooms, they refer to the little ones as sprout from the ground. And they refer to them as the little children because they're playful and they're wise at the same time. They're tricksters, but they're also very wise. But so you have to engage with them. I'll say more about that. But so we have to remember, we have to be willing, and it takes a time. And that, by the way, I'll talk more about this towards the end. That's why I start taking groups to Oaxaca, to Mexico, for people to see and experience in as much as they could that relationship with the children. Because we need to really understand that it's a radical form of seeing the world. And as I tell you this, this is something that Andrea heard me say last time that I talked to you guys, is I don't want you to listen to this as an anthropologist would, like, oh, this is so interesting. They're so curious, the Mazatec, that they see this and they think this. And, oh, my God, this is so nice, so cute. No, that's not the view. I want you to listen to it existentially, which means I want you to ask yourself, how does this apply to me? How is this relevant for me? Whether you are thinking about whether you've been using the mushrooms or working with the mushrooms for a while, or whether you're thinking to have experience for the first time, or whether you're serving mushrooms or truffles. How does this apply to me? And that's the question that as I was speaking about another tradition, right? So it's easy to otherize, to think about them and us. But I want you to do is to take it very personally and really explore and think about it. Now, the first thing to say about the Mazatec is this idea of the syncretism, right? There is the Mazatecs, obviously, before the Spanish arrived to Mexico, were not Catholic. Nobody was. But when they arrived, they kind of brought in and pushed in the Catholic religion into their ways. And we can say whether that is good or bad, that would be another important discussion. But the fact is that the Mazatec kind of took it in and blended in a very beautiful way. So, for example, the spirit of the mountain in Huautla Jiménez, the birthplace of Maria Sabina, she lived by the mountain. They talk about the guardian of the mountain, right? And now they would say that that guardian is Jesus Christ. And when they see the gentleman that appears there is Jesus Christ. This is one of many examples that say, oh, so we have the guardian of us, and you're telling us that Jesus is our protector, our savior. Oh, he's the same guy, right? This happened everywhere. This is not only specific to the Mazatecs, but when you see, you realize that there is a constant weaving of the ancient pre-Hispanic traditions and the Christian Catholic, more specifically, Catholic way of working. For example, the Mother Earth was a big focus of adoration for the ancient Mexicans. And not surprisingly, with the Mother Mary, the Virgin Mary of Guadalupe appear literally into the scene, they say, oh, again, this is the same. This is the mother that we know so well. So when they're praying to Jesus, or when they're praying to the saints, or when they're praying to Mother Mary, they're also praying to their ancient gods and goddesses, divinities. We could call them archetypal in nature. So it doesn't really matter what is the label that we put to them. But they're saying, this is the mother, this is the savior, this is the protector. And they live in a world that it is very magical. So every mountain has a guardian, every river, every waterfall has a spirit that guides it. And you need to be in constant relationship with this spirit. Now, again, because I want you to take this existentially, I don't want you to think, oh, that's so interesting that they do that. No, the invitation is, are you living in a magical world? How are you connecting with the world that surrounds you? Because the Mazatec would say, the spirits are still here. The spirits didn't go away. Just because you live in a city full of concrete and electricity doesn't mean that spirits are gone. So how are you connected to the spirits of the plants that surround you? How are you connected to Father, Son, to Mother Earth? So again, that's the invitation. As a funny side note, when the Catholic priests were trying to introduce the idea of the Holy Communion, the wafer, the Holy Host, to the Mazatec, as you probably know, the word for the Holy Host, the Holy Communion in Catholicism, is the body of Christ, right? Of course, the word for the magic mushrooms, the sacred mushrooms in Mazatec, is Teononacatl, which means the flesh of God. So they say, oh, is the same, right? But then they say, they try the host and they say, no, ours works a lot better than yours. So it took them a while to convince them that little piece of bread, with all due respect, that this is historical, that piece of bread was actually the body of Christ, because they've been eating the flesh of the gods for so long with very different impact in their tradition. So that's just, again, it's kind of a funny story that how this syncretism plays an interesting part of how we do it. So as I was saying, the Mazatec believe in asking permission before doing ceremony. When you're going to climb a mountain, you ask permission for the mountain, and you ask for the protection of the spirit of the mountain. I have so many interesting stories about those things, but I won't go into those. When you're going to recollect some branches to do a branch limpia, a cleansing with branches. You talk to the plant and you say, I you ask for permission to do that. And you actually listen, by the way. This is not just, I've been with healers and they're going to cut a plant and then they stop and they go somewhere else. Say, hey, what happened? Why you didn't like those? And say, no, the tree told me that they were not ready for healing. Wow. They're not just doing it as a formula, right? Actually listening to the plant, to the tree, to the berry, and ask for the, when they're asking for permission. So that's also something important. Again, going back to this idea of their relationship. Now, these spirits are neutral. They're not good. They're not evil. They're neutral, which means that they can be giving and they can be punishing. It really depends on what is your relationship to them. So that's why they do offering. And again, this is by the way, an interesting common tradition in most shamanic cultures, right? The shamanic has their own flavor of it. But they say, if you are not taking in the spirits, if you don't have a good relationship with the spirits will mess with you. If you don't have a good relationship with the mushrooms will not play along with you. Remember, they're children. I tell my clients when we work with the mushrooms that in some ways, like children, right? Imagine that you go to a place and there's a lot of children and they want to play with you. And if you don't want to play, they say, like, if you're carrying a ball, right? They say, no, I don't want to play. I want to talk adult stuff. They begin to be nasty with you. They pull your hair, they pull your clothes, and they want to engage with you. And it may be difficult, but if you're willing to play, you're going to have a great time because they're going to say, oh, then we can show them our secrets. So again, that's when there's the opening of the wisdom, right? So this idea of reciprocity, this idea of balance, this idea of relationship are very, very, very important for them. As a matter of fact, they would say that sickness comes about for being in a bad relationship with the spirits. Many, many sicknesses come. The first thing that you, one of the first things that the shaman would ask you is, have you disrespected the spirits? And sometimes the work is to figure out what spirits was disrespected. Or another way of saying this, how are you not in balance? So sickness is about unbalance and healing is about regaining balance. And often regaining balance has to do with offering something to certain spirits, to certain guardians. Sometimes balance is about fixing something in the relationship with others or taking care of something in the relationship with yourself. So it's all about relation, all about, again, this is very, very shamanic in general. It's about relationship. And obviously that's the case with the mushrooms. When you work the mushrooms, the children, they open the doors to the spirit. In some ways, the mushrooms for the Mazatecs are intermediaries between the two spirits. They see them as the ones that, because they are... They say a whole bunch of beautiful things. They say they have no roots, which is arguable because of the mycelium, right? But they don't have roots like trees do. So they say they just sprout because they want to. They're gifts of the God. Sometimes in this syncretic way, they say where the tears of the Virgin fell or the drops of the blood of Christ fell, that's where the mushrooms sprout. And they sprout there because the spirits, the gods, wanted us to have access. So they say we're so poor that we don't have. They say we are so poor we don't have access to Western medicine. So this is our medicine. This is what spirits, the gods, have given us to heal ourselves. Lucky them, huh? So they have these medicines and these intermediaries. And when you are, and you can ask them. I'll get more into the Velada in a moment. You ask questions to them. But when you're a healer, when you're doing this work as part of your training, let's say so, because it's the best way to train is to do the work yourself, right? When you're a healer and you start taking the children, one of the first questions they ask you is, what type of healer do you want to be? And this is a question for you all, right? If you are in the path of healing, what type of healer do you want to be? And the second is, who do you want to be your guides and allies? And this question is really important because in the Mazatec tradition, the curandero, the curandera, is a person of power. As a matter of fact, not only in the Mazatec, but in general, for in many traditions, the word for shaman in their original tongue, the original language, always means the person who knows. The person who knows how to sing, the person who knows how to connect with spirits, the person who knows how to dream, the person who knows themselves. So all of these aspects are important if you're in this path, is what type of healer do I want to be? Who are my allies? Now, if you say, well, I'm not a healer, I'm just trying to do this for myself, it's kind of the same question. What type of person do you want to be? And who do you want to be your guides? We all need guides. We all need teachers. And some people ask, how do you know if a healer is a good healer, right? And in the Mazatec, that question is kind of funny because it's almost like the answer is, you know it by their fruits. A good healer heals, right? And why do they heal? Because they have integrity. They have integrity and they have a good relationship with the medicine. As a result, when they go into the ceremony, they can be your defense attorney, you may think of, and they can actually defend you in the face of the medicine. So they, and you hear that in the Mazatec tradition, when the curandero is, or curandera is taking the medicine, that you actually see them arguing, is really funny, arguing with the spirits and say, no, this person is a good person. He's a good father. He's taking care of his children, among many things, right? He goes to church, whatever it is. No, it's not okay. Remember, in the relationship, you're trying to find where was the issue, where was the problem, and where we need to deal. So the mushrooms are the ones that open the door, and the curanderos are the intermediaries. As a matter of fact, when you see, Wandrea, if you remind me, I can send you the link to one of the video, the most famous videos, a documentary on Maria Sabina. And it's really interesting, so you can share it with the group. It's really interesting. You hear her say over and over, they say blah, 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 blah. They say this, they say they're saying this. So the mushroom is talking and the curandero is interpreting or conveying what the mushrooms are saying. If you, as many of you have, you've taken the medicine, you also probably have this experience of the mushrooms talking with you. It's really fascinating. And this happens in my experience, mostly with natural, with power plants, not so much with compounds, but you can hear the voice of the medicine. I've heard hundreds, probably not thousands, but hundreds of conversations where someone is, when I'm sitting with someone and that someone is, and they go like, on mushrooms, and they go like, yeah, but what about, yes, I understand. Yes, thank you. So you actually hear the conversation. You are actually in communion with a wise being that you can engage with them. And you can fight with them, just like the Mazatec healers do. You can argue with them. They're funny because they smile. Like, it's almost the way I feel it for myself. It's like a little child arguing with his parents about why I don't want to go to bed, and very seriously arguing, and say, okay, let me explain you again why it's important for you to go to bed now. So they're very kind, very gentle, very patient, but they will listen, and they will respect your concerns, and they answer you. They're never questions that are too small or too irrelevant. If these are the questions that are coming from your heart, these are the questions worth asking, right? So the mushrooms, as these intermediaries, they see everything, they know everything, and you cannot lie to them. One of the things that they emphasize is absolute transparency, because they know everything, right? But they're also checking on you, and they've called my bluff many times when you are trying to hide something from them and say, what is over there in that corner? Okay, okay, let's go there. And then we explore that. So there's something about your willingness in the Huichol tradition, not the Mazatec, but in the Huichol tradition, the Peyote tradition here in Mexico, they believe that when before you take the medicine, the peyote, you have to purify yourself. It's almost, it's similar like confession. You have to talk, and in that case, it's in front of the whole gathering. You have to talk your faults, everything that you've done that you are not proud of. Since the last time you took the peyote, you have to share it with that, with the community. The Huichol are very humorous people, very chill people. And those gatherings become not a moment of seriousness of, oh, let me, I have seen, and let me tell you my sin. They say, yeah. And the other day I was looking at your wife, Florencio, and I really thought, oh, she looks really good. And they all laugh. They have a good laugh because they understand we're all humans, right? It's not like you're having horrible thoughts and I am not having them. I'm also having them. So it's also normalizing in a way that we all have in our own consciousness things that we might not be so proud about, and sharing them kind of lights the burden. So when you meet with these intermediaries, we come as clean as possible. Remember that you're eating the flesh of God. So if you think about it, you become the vessel. You become the holy vessel. And the cleaner you are as a vessel, the more worthy you're going to be of consuming the flesh of God and to get the lessons that the medicine has, sorry, for you. So that's, by the way, one of the reasons that they ask you to abstain from having sex or abstain from certain food, the dieta among the Mazatecs is not as demanding as in other traditions. The ayahuasca tradition is famous for very stringent dietas. The Mazatecs are not so restringent, but there's still some of that. So when you go into the ceremony, and let me talk a little bit about the ceremony. Hold on, let me talk about the ceremony, the so-called the velada. The velada means a ceremony at night. And it's called a velada because the word for candle is vela. So velada, it means that we're going to be using velas, candles, to light the space. So it usually happens at night. And the idea for it is that you want to be, is the equivalent of using the blindfold in a way. When you do it at night, you're going to see what's within. You're not so interested in what is happening outside. You want the mushrooms to reveal to you what is going in inside. So this velada is a timeless space. It's a space outside. It's in between morning, in between the day, and in between the night. So it's a timeless space where healing becomes possible because it's a realm of possibilities. It's an opportunity to reunite what is divided, to integrate what is fragmented, and to expel the evil from within you. And again, it has many useful. Sometimes, well, let me talk about the altar first, and then I'll talk about the ceremony itself. So the altar, there's always an altar, and it usually is oriented towards the Easter sky. I know that different traditions have different perspectives about it, but in the Mazatec, it's ideally oriented towards the East. And it's a place, it's a working space. When you go to a mechanic, and you see a table in front there, and they have a ton of tools and stuff in the table. That's what the altar is. That's where the healer has their instrument of power, right? That's where they have their plants. That's where they have anything that they use, smoke and rubbing, San Pedro and different plants. That's what they use in order to heal others. So it's a space for work where the humans and the not humans come together. It is famous when Gordon Wasson, that you mentioned, Wandrea, was there with Maria Sabina. This is not reported that often, but in one report that I read, they say that, okay, you can sit anywhere except here. And she did that, okay. And then, and I don't remember it before and after. She said, I think after. She said, why can I not sit there? And Maria Sabina said, oh, because that's where the Holy Spirit sits. And then, being a Westerner, I says, and how do you know if the Holy Spirit comes? And she just looked at him like, what are you talking about? I see him when he's when this Holy Spirit is seen there. So it's you again, the different way of understanding the word. The question same funny for Maria Sabina, for Gordon Wilson is, how are you, what tangible evidence do you have that the Holy Spirit is sitting there? Right. So again, the ceremony is in the dark because you want the children to bring in the light. And again, the ceremony, it is a place to get answers, to for the truth to be revealed, and for healing to happen. And all those things, obviously, they're not excluded. One does not exclude the other. You can have all of that. There are some risks involved in the ceremony, they believe, because when that happens, the client's soul is not in the room, is going into the spirit world. So one of the jobs of the healer, of the curandero, is to take care of the body while it is there, and to make sure that the soul comes back into the spirit. Sometimes, as you probably heard, that includes finding fragments of the soul that have been lost in different ages, in different moments, and bring them back. So there is something about bringing it together. How do they do that? They do it through limpias, cleansings, as we said. They do it to extractions, chupas. They do it to massage. They do it to plants. They do it up through. They have a whole bunch of tools, I would say, that they use in order to make sure that the body is protected and that the soul comes back and comes back healed from the spirit world. How are we doing on time? We have like 10 more minutes. I think we're good. So find answers, show the truth, and get what you want from that. So the last thing that I want to say, and this is controversial, I know, but this is not me. So the shamans, the curanderos, are archetypal figures, right? And they're archetypal because we've seen them in every tradition. We've seen them, every tradition, doesn't matter what it is, find their develop their own ways of medicine women, medicine men, sometimes two dual spirits that are in charge of doing that. Now, Carl Jung suggested back in his time, not that long ago, that maybe psychotherapists are the Western manifestation of shamans. And again, careful here. He's not saying that we are the shamans of the West. He's saying that we are the, just like the shamans, we are the ones that are constantly, and I know that not all of you here are psychotherapists, but you're healers. So all of you are in an, you're engaging when you serve the medicine, you're engaging in an interaction, in a relationship with this world of spirit. Of course, we don't call it spirit, we're killing the psyche. We call it the unconscious, right? But it is kind of the same idea that we have our own ways of engaging with the world of spirit, our own way of connecting to the powers that be, the powers that exist within the other, this power that exists in the plants, the powers that exist in the environment. And the idea is that if you're a healer, and this goes back to the question that I ask you, what type of healers do you want to be? Obviously, and my apologies if this is too psychotherapy loaded. I usually talk to psychotherapists, so I have a it's where my mind goes as a psychotherapist. But of course, if you're a healer from any path, what type of healer do you want to be, and in which way have you learned your songs? Are you familiar with your own craziness, with your own spirits and your own wounding? And those are the type of things that we need to keep in mind when we're doing this healing. So let me take, is this a good time, Wondra, to talk about the pilgrimage?
Yes, I think this would be a great time.
Okay. So my apologies if I threw up a lot of information for you. This is, I'm passionate about these things, and I want you to give you a lot for you to think about as you live here. There's significantly much more that I could say about this, but this is just to give you an idea. And as I said, and this is not me trying to sell you something, but this was Wandrea's idea that maybe you'll be interested in me telling you about this. So every year for the last, I don't know how many years, for a few years now, quite a few years, I've been taking groups to Mexico first and to Oaxaca, and then to Huautla de Jiménez, which is the heartland of María Sabina. The reason why I start doing this is because I live in California. I right now I live in Sacramento, but I've lived many years here in the Bay Area. I lived in the Bay Area for many years. And I realized that there were a lot of people who were using the sacred mushrooms probably well. I'm not criticizing them, but they have no idea of how the tradition was using the mushrooms. So I said, you know what? It would be good to take people to see how this living tradition, one of the Mazatecs were lucky in that way because they're high up in the mountains and they are very, very poor. They didn't have gold, they didn't have copper, they didn't have anything. They live in a mountain where you cannot cultivate stuff. So the Spaniards came, conquered them and let them be by themselves. So the tradition, even though they have been mixed with Catholic faith, they're still very, very relevant, very close to their original tradition. So what I do every year is I take a group and I call it a pilgrimage because this is clearly not a retreat. And I tell people when they come, oh, this is not going to be one of those nice retreats, which I also done. They're wonderful. When you go to a nice place and you are everything's taken care of, but here everything is taken care of, but this is more of a pilgrimage. We begin in Mexico City. The reason why we go to Mexico City is because I want people to go. We go to the Shrine of Maria de Guadalupe, so you understand. We go to the Museum of Anthropology, so you understand how the ancient Mexicans worship the Mother Earth. And also we also show this, probably you've seen it, the famous statue of Xochipilli, the Prince of Flowers, which is in a psychedelic ecstasy. Anyway, there's a lot of a beautiful way of understanding the culture. So we start there. We go to the Villa Guadalupe to understand how in those places you get a mixing of the traditional Mexican way of worshiping and the Catholic way of worshiping. So we get you understanding the Mexican cosmology. And then from there, we go to Huautla. We go to the mountain and we do ceremonies with two different healers there. In Huautla, so you have the experience to see more than the mushrooms themselves. I actually tell the participants, this may not be your most strong mushroom ceremony ever, because what I want you to do is to also pay attention about how they are relating to the mushroom. If you go very, very high, you're completely out and you don't see what happens. You also want to see the songs they sing, the ceremonies they do, the tools they use, how they use the smoke, how they use the plants, how we use different things. So we want you to do that. We want you to have that experience. So we have different experience with a couple of healers there. We also do, because of this reciprocity thing, I don't want this just to be like a trip to Disneyland, right? Like you go there, you eat the mushroom, you get your photo with the curandero, just like you would do with Mickey Mouse, and then you go back home. You buy your souvenirs and then you go back home. No, this is not it. So we actually, every time we do service for the community. We have painted walls. We have clean paths for them. We visited schools. We have planted trees in order to say, obviously we cannot, the reciprocity is never going to be balanced. They're giving us so much more than we can give to them. But there's a way, and we say, no, we want to serve your community. We want to, I've developed a relationship with people there. So we're not just saying, hey, we want to give you a bunch of money to do whatever. That's usually not a good idea. It creates a lot of problem. We actually go and ask them, what do you need? How can we support your real situation? In our first trip, pilgrimage, we actually did that. We said, well, let's bring stuff to the school. did and it was helpful, but we realized that's not the best way to do it. It's better to ask them, what do you need? And then see how we can support them. And of course, financial support is always welcome, but there's something about doing something with your own hands. You could, the people that have gone can say, you know what? I plant 120 trees in the Mazatec Sierra, and that does something for you. So you know that you are actually giving back to the community. So that's the idea. Then we go to Oaxaca City and we do ceremony there, with sacred medicine, but not with psychedelic medicine. We do a temazcal, which some of you may have heard of, may know what a temazcal, but if you don't, it's kind of in the US, they call it a sweat lodge. It's a very, very specific type of sweat lodge. You go into a almost like a little cave, which is like the womb. And it's a beautiful health ceremony in which you are reborn after that process. But, and again, it's with local healers, with local curanderas. We have one curandero this time around, so curanderos. But it's this idea that what you go is to have an experience of that. And I think it's good for people to, if you're involved, if you're only going to do mushroom for yourself once or twice, probably you don't, it would be interesting for you to go to Wautla, but probably not, you don't need it. But if you're serving medicine or you're interested in this path, I think it's very important that you understand. You may not do it like them, remember the appropriation thing, but you still may want to understand how they hold the sacredness and the beauty of the relationship they have with the holy children. And with that, and 30 seconds left in my timer, Wandrea, I'll stop.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much, Sergio. You've given us such a broad overview and just bringing in that sense of respect, reciprocity, and delineation has been beautiful. So I want to open up now to questions. The only thing you didn't share are the dates for the pilgrimage. And if you want to share the link for people to get more information, I'll share that as sure. Well in the replay.
Sure. So the dates are July 4 to 13 of this year, July 4 to 13. And the price is $4,500, and that includes everything, absolutely everything except your flight. All accommodations, all the ceremonies, all meals, everything is included. It's 10 days, except your flight.
Wow, that is really beautiful. I'm so excited. So excited. So my friends, who has a question? You can raise your hand electronically, or you can maybe wave at me. I'll see who's got questions. Silence.
Everything has been explained.
Oh, we got it all.
Utterly satisfaction.
Well, I'm also curious to hear some of your personal experiences, because you said you have so many stories, things that you didn't share. We have some time. So if there's something that sticks out in your mind as, you know, really poignant on your own healing journey, or as you've been training and in your apprenticeship, anything that shifted for you. I mean, as you said, you are Mexican, but you've been trained in the West. So being able to engage in the apprenticeship, I'm just curious, or maybe it's been in a ceremony. Anything you care to share?
No, yes, I hear you. Thank you for that question. So I start my own work, as all of us, because I was wounded. I had my own, I won't go into the details for that, but I had significant, I much of the wounded I didn't even know that I had, right? It just, things were not working for me. And I was called to the medicine, something as a tangent within the tangent, something that I learned many years ago. I was doing some research and I was talking to one of my indigenous teachers, and I was saying, well, I chose to do my research on mushrooms, blah, blah, blah. And then she looks at me with a twinkle in her eyes and says, what makes you think that you chose the mushrooms? It kind of blew my mind to think maybe the mushrooms have been calling me, not in a messianic way or anything. It called many of us, But there's something about thinking, if you're in this path, maybe you have been, you are being called to do this week. And for me, it was very clear that the medicine was calling me. I didn't even know exactly why, but I knew that I needed to do this work and take this path. And over the years, almost 20 now, I've been thinking, okay, so I've done a good amount of ceremonies with different medicines. And I've asked myself, what does the medicine teach me? What is the basic message of the medicine, at least for me, which I'm not to say that that's the message that everybody receives. And there was this journey some couple of years ago, not that long ago, that I was wondering this question, and the mushrooms, the children say, okay, Sergio. They kind of go like this, okay, with a big smile, right? We've taught you this lesson many, many times, but you clearly forget easily. So let us tell you again. And the message is, you are all right just the way you are. The world is fine just the way you are. And things are unfolding as they should. And that's a huge lesson. One that I often have difficulty accepting and argue with, especially when you look the world around us. Like, who could say that the world is fine just the way you are? But if you look around the mystics, they actually say something like that. It's fine. It's fine. It's part of the plot, right? We think in very short term, but it's part of the arc that is developing, and consciousness is evolving. And yes, we need to do our part, but life is unfolding. The desiderata, right? Things are happening just as they should. So that to me is a very powerful message that I keep repeating to myself, right? Yes, it's like Thich Nhat Hanh said, no, not Thich Nhat Hanh, Suzuki Roshi said once, you are perfect just the way you are. You could use some improvement. So we still do our part. We still need to do our part, but we have to understand that the universe makes no mistakes. And learning that, to me, has been a lifetime experience.
Thank you for sharing that. I love that. That really resonates for me personally. Mm. So, my friends, some of you have experienced mushrooms. Some of you have experienced truffles. Some of you haven't even gone there yet. What are your questions for Sergio? You can type them in the chat or you can unmute. What do you want to dig deeper in? Any aspect of veladas or the cleansing, appropriation versus inspiration? What's coming up for you? Michelle? Wait, I can't hear you. I see you're unmuted, but I don't hear you yet. All right, you're going to come back with headphones or something. Yeah. All right, in the meantime, we'll have Cookie, Caroline, and then Michelle, you come back to us.
Cookie.
First of all, thank you.
You.
And I'm trying to regulate myself. I'm like really all over the place. Oh. You are describing the dream I woke up with this morning. I'm like just blown away. So I'm also, Mandria is my mentor. We are working through all the programs and everything with her. I'm also a psychotherapist. How does one get more? I'm trying to find the right words to say here. Not the right words, okay. Don't get in your headspace. I want to get more into this world. I do come from the expanded human experiences in the spiritual world, that realm. I'm also also kind of come from multiple traditions and religious background too. I was raised in India, so I have all this parts. I was raised Catholic. That was my dream. I was reminded about how to weave this, and I was resisting that part of it. Yeah, and I'm a psychotherapist, and my whole purpose that I'm walking towards is bringing this conversation of spirituality and normalizing this in the counseling field. And that has been my journey. I'm presenting, I'm doing quite a bit of things, actually coming out of my hidden self. So kind of going into this journey, into this the pilgrimage and learning more and being in the space with the Western and my traditions and everything, what would you kind of advise? Like, what is a suggestion like for a person in this Western world who's completely clinically trained, right? In the clinical way for healing trauma and addictions and everything like that. Any suggestions to viewing it?
Just one question, Carol, and this is not me trying to be a therapist. When you say normalizing this, what do you mean by, what is the thing that you mean? What do you mean by this?
The spirit world and the medicine, to really say this is what we need to, we have to have this conversation openly, no hiding in the closet. Like, I am exhausted hiding in the spiritual closet.
Yes.
Like, to have this normal conversation. Yes, we do see spirits. We do communicate with spirits. A healer can go into the spaces beyond and bring in all the shattered and broken pieces, right, of our parts. The one that you described and what trauma, right? That is my, that's my concentration of my work. So normalizing that, having those words, the language to actually say, this is what it is. No using, you know, other words to navigate those things, right? You could understand how it is to kind of be in this academia. And I'm also a researcher. I'm also a field researcher.
Well, it's interesting because in some ways it's embedded in the field, right? If you think about it, and this may seem like a too simple an answer for you, but let me start there. Psyche means spirit. So when we talk about psychology, that's the study of the spirit. Psychotherapy is the treatment of spirit or soul. So it is embedded in the idea of what psychotherapy is. It's about this process. And when you see the evolution of psychotherapy, is that at some point we lost it. And we start believe, if you go to this dictionary and look the definition of psychotherapy, it usually means the study of the mind. And sometimes even the brain. Well, that's now neurology, right? But if we reclaim the meaning of the word psychotherapy, and that's why I wanted to end it with Carl Jung. Here's a great example of someone that's saying, no, it's a lot bigger, right? Psychotherapy, most of Western psychotherapy is mind psychotherapy, right? It's about making you able to function in the world. But that's not enough. We need to start thinking, okay, what is beyond that? And sometimes what I do, Carolyn, give you a kind of a secret of the trade. When people have difficulty talking about spirit and spirituality and all those realms, I present it in terms of existential language. Well, what is your meaning? What are you here for? What is the ultimate meaning of purpose of your life? What do you want your life to be? And that so beautifully opens the space to the transpersonal, because self-realization, right? We just self-realization, self-actualization, our word, like, become all that you can be. But what is that I? From self-realization, we move into self-transcendence, because you want to go beyond that. And with medicine is very easy, with mushrooms is very easy, because the mushrooms show you that there's so much more, right? But even if you don't, the humanistic is very interesting. If you study, as you probably have, the story of psychology, the humanistic psychologists started studying, okay, Freud gave us the half of the work, right? The sick part, Freud and the say, okay, this is the sick. What happens when you start focusing about the best of humanity? The other half, the ones that are not sick, the ones that are actually great. And they, the humanistics, started studying the best of human beings, the best leaders, the spiritual guides. And not because they were spiritual, because they seem to be happy. They seem to be making more out of life. And it was them, the humanistic, that stumbled upon the transpersonal. They realized when you take humanness to its final frontier, you begin you step into the world of spirit. So it's just about inviting people to be all that they can be. It's just inviting people to really imagine how great their life could be. And in that process, I guarantee you, because that's the way we are wired, eventually you're going to stumble upon a spirit. Carl Jung, again, used to say, invited or uninvited, spirit is always present. So it is more a matter of inviting spirit in our language, in the way we hold the conversations, in the way we talk to clients. Again, don't start talking about spiritual stuff if the client is not ready for that. That's alienating, and it may feel like you're imposing something. But just speaking in psychological terms, existential psychology, phenomenology are just so rich when it comes to bringing you into that world. And you have a great mentor. Wondrea can definitely help you with that.
Thank you for the question, Cookie. Really good stuff. I see you grappling with it, but you're directed. You're going on your path. It's beautiful. Michelle, do you think your mic's hooked up?
Is it working?
Yes, we hear you.
Yes, okay. Sorry, I forgot that this was an hour and a half, so I ran downstairs during the presentation to make dinner. So I think when I plugged back in, it got messed up. I also come from a clinical background. I'm a clinical psychologist. And I've actually spent quite a few years not practicing clinically in program development and administration. So now that I'm re-entering the clinical world from this very different perspective than that I had before I left it, and how most of us were trained, I get it. I'm having a little bit of a hard time, like, really embodying it. And I think that it's because it feels almost like imposter syndrome, you know, kind of like even just trying to step into it as a Caucasian Westerner is appropriation in and of itself, regardless. So I don't know. I feel like I wonder, how do you, I guess, gain experience with a curandero, or like, how do you find those opportunities? Or is there something different you might recommend to try to, I don't know, feel a little more worthy in the space, or like fit in?
Where are you, Michelle?
I'm sitting in Malmo. I live in Malmo, Sweden. I'm American though.
Okay. No, because one, yes. Thank you very much for that question. Where to start? Well, the first and foremost, find your tradition. We all come from indigenous traditions, all of us. Some of us may have to look very close. Some of us may have to look many, many generations. Some of us may have to look to the other side of the continent, to the other side of the ocean. But we all have an indigenous tradition. So there's something about finding your tradition and studying that tradition, whether it's Celtic, whether it's whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. There's something about finding that tradition. Nobody is, what happened to us is, and that includes me, is that we were unrooted, right? And that's why for me, even though I'm Mexican, it's hard to find direct lineage to my traditions. Sometimes, you know, taking one of these DNA tests to find out what are your traditions, because that your ancestors are running through your veins. Your ancient traditions are running through your veins, and every single one of us, it doesn't matter where you are sitting, you have an indigenous tradition that is palpitating inside, waiting to be received. And when you begin working in that direction, follow your intuition. For example, to give you an example of mine, I was studying the Mexican traditions, right? And the Mayan tradition, it's a very rich tradition. It's a beautiful tradition. It's a very, not intact, but it's still a very, it's a living tradition. I just could never connect with it. Never, never, ever. I couldn't connect with it. While the Aztec tradition always resonated with me. Many years, so that's the one that called me. Many years later, when I did my DNA studies, it, lo and behold, I had Nahuatl blood, but no Mayan blood whatsoever. So coincidence? I don't think so. But there's something about that. That's not all the answer, but that's the beginning. Because when you find your tradition and you begin to connect with that tradition and I'm practicing whatever that tradition provides, then you begin to see that other traditions are not equivalent, but are similar. Because all shamanic traditions came from the same source in a way. All shamanic traditions talk about balance. All about shamanic are animistic. All shamanic traditions talk about reciprocity. It's inherent in our being. So then when you go, you do something like the retreat, the pilgrimage that I'm doing, then you begin and you talk, you learn from in this case, Mazatec healers. Then you say, oh yeah, this reminds me of this other thing. This connects with this other thing. And that's where the thing of about inspiration comes into play. Because you can combine it with your, the shamans did that themselves. I was talking with a Native American healer once and say, we borrow all the time from each other back then, before it was appropriation, say, oh, the Lakotas are doing this. Oh, that's your great idea. Well, we're going to do this. Yeah, the Sunni are doing this. Oh, that's really what we're going to start doing this dance for. It was what we call cross-pollination. What happened with the West, but they were enriching each other. So in that way, that's totally fine. I was connected. My teacher was one of the 13 grandmothers that were doing the rounds many years ago in all of the US. My teacher, she happened to be the one that was chosen for this, but it was beautiful because I knew her before the 13 grandmothers, and then I continued working with her, like I said, until she passed. But many years later, after she has gone over the world and do things and try all the medicine stuff, I was talking with her one way and say, yeah, you know, there's something about the heart chakra. And I say, wait a minute, what are you talking about chakras? I say, well, you know what? I really like the way this grandmother from Kerala or something, I don't remember, was talking about the energy body. So it's the same thing that we call, but I kind of like the word chakra. So there's a way this cross-pollination keeps happening even nowadays. But again, the difference with appropriation is like you're just taking without caring, right? There's nothing wrong with, if you've studied, if you learn, if you've taken the time to use some tools from other tradition, but you have to do your work. That's what I tell people. You have to do your work and you have to use it for whatever they use it. So for example, to use one example, sage is very sacred as a cleansing plant, right? If you start using it for something else, that's an appropriation, right? If you start Ganesha, this is a great example. Lord Ganesha, the elephant-headed god from India, right? I'm deeply devoted to Ganesha, but then I go to some places here in the United States and I see a statue of Ganesha. Oh, you worship Ganesha? I say no, I don't even know who that is, but it looks really cool. That's what I'm talking about. That's appropriation. That's the type of things that we're talking about. So, but again, I don't know if I'm answering your question, Michelle, but get to your tradition and start learning about others. Take the opportunities to learn other traditions.
Thank you. You absolutely helped. Oh. Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Michelle. I think that's one that all of us are asking, no matter our skin color, when you start stepping onto the shamanic path or whatever we want to call ourselves, medicine men and women, it brings up these questions. So thank you for offering that to this space. Who else has a question?
Let me say one more that sure. I just thought, Andrea, because what you said, and if you start using something, let's say that you start using sage for smudging, right? Or for cleansing, and somehow doesn't feel right, check within. Don't dismiss it. Check, okay, this practice, I still have not, maybe I need to dig deeper. I learn more. I need to go to sit at the feet of an elder that from this tradition to understand more about it. So listen to that as well. Don't dismiss it. But also, again, you have the right to be here and you have the right to be a healer and you have the right to do these things. We're all members of the human race. Thank you.
Thank you, Sergio. Noemi, I see that your hand is up.
Yes, and thank you very much, Sergio. Unfortunately, I was only able to catch the last part of this, but it was juicy nevertheless. nourishing, I guess. And I guess I had this insight as listening to you and listening to the discussion and also Caroline's question, that maybe what this is that, yeah, I'm thinking about the way you talked about spirituality versus psychology and how, you know, it's healing healing the spirit is what psychotherapy does. And it seems that there is, we keep being invited back from disbelief into trusting in our own inner divinity by the mushroom spirits, so to speak, that we keep looking for something more than what we already have, some validation. And the answer that we get is always so simple as to almost disappoint. Because what more can you say than your psyche is already your spirit? You know, you're already divine, you're already. And, you know, also when you said, maybe, you know, what makes you think that you're looking for the mushroom and not the mushroom is the one who's coming to you, also seems to go along with, you know, along that, those lines. If I think about that, you know, what does it mean for some random mushroom out there to decide that I, you know, in my case, Noemi, and, you know, Catherine, or, you know, to be chosen to be, you know, you're worth my while to come and look for you. And, you know, personally, I'm, my heritage is Hungarian, and there's a mixture of some other things, but through and through European. And Hungarians hail from the Asian steppes, back a few hundred to 1,000 and some years, you know, 1,000 years ago, let's say. And our closest relatives are the Siberian people in Russia. And of course, that's very difficult to access information about that. But mushrooms figure very prominently in those shamanistic traditions, and Hungarians still have some cultural memory of shamans having been, you know, part of our ancestry and heritage. So that gives me a sense of welcome, I guess, in the space with mushrooms. And I'm not sure that this is a specific question, as much as just sharing my insight and bouncing it off of you, that there seems to be like almost a conspiracy to between, you know, among all these spirits out there in the world, whether it's the Mazatec or the Siberian shamans or whatever, to find us so that we can all heal and to lead us back to some tradition. And to convince us that we're all so, you know, precious enough. And anyway, this is what's been going through my head and my heart as I've been listening.
Beautiful, Naomi. Thank you. I agree with you. I mean, when Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, if you recall that guy, the one that was eventually the Beatles guru, said that he was in his mountain back wherever he was in India. And he was meditating and he just kept hearing the word America or something like that. And he couldn't understand what it was. And eventually he understood, oh, I've been called to go to America. And we hear this in the Amazonian healers as well, that the medicine is telling them the world needs this. I've heard this also from Mazatec healers, that there's a time when right now the medicine is really needed, right? And who could disagree with that? We really need all the help that we can get, right? And I believe that the mushrooms, I talk about the mushroom because that's my path, but that the different medicines are saying, we need to give a hand to these people. These humans are really, really lost. Let's give them a hand, because they are eternal, right? They're not worried about the next 100 years. They've been around for millennia, and they'll continue being around for millennia. So, but they're thinking we could help in the evolution of consciousness. So I agree with you that there's something that happens in the Bhagavad Gita. They say that Krishna says that whenever the world is in need of support, right, the Krishna comes into being into the world. And Ramdas once asked his guru, why LSD? And his guru said, well, the West is so materialistic that God had to come as a substance in order for you to receive it. So I think that we have to give credit to these plants, to this wisdom, that they're going to manifest. Present, invited or uninvited, spirit is always present, right? So it's more about us being capable of, or us paying attention, which is getting harder and harder, right? So many things competing for our attention, but I agree with you, okay? Fully.
I love this discussion, because it's what Noemi is hinting at is, you know, if we are truly called, it can often make us feel like, wait, who, me? I'm worthy of being in relationship with this spiritual being. And it makes me remember, you know, all of my most impactful journeys with this sacred medicine is I connect and I remember I'm not separate from, I'm not this poor little victim saying, please God, please heal me. It's like, oh, I am one with all, I am divine. And yes, I deserve this. Yes, you deserve this. They're just coming to like, they're waving whatever flag you need, whether it's LSD, it's MDMA, it's ayahuasca, or it's these holy children. You deserve it. And that's why you're hearing the call. So you don't have to question it. I mean, you may question like, do I really want to go on a journey or whatever? But just know that we are one with the earth. We are one with this sacred planet. We're not just beings on it. And so just like your liver, if you went out drinking a bunch last night, your liver is going to be like, okay, we got to clean up the blood. The liver doesn't sit there and say, are you worthy? It's like, no, I'm going to help you out. And that's what I feel like plant medicines are using, whatever means possible to get our attention so that we can heal our relationship with the planet, our relationship to ourselves, our relationship to spirit.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And if you think about it, if you think in terms of the hero's journey or heroine's journey, it always begins with a call. And almost always, if not always, the called one says, who, me? No, you got it wrong. It should be someone else, it should be my brother or some. Who am I to be the one called? And again, many of us have been called because many of us are needed. Right? Because maybe 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, only one person could transform a whole region. Right now, everything's so diluted that I think that the medicine is saying we need as many allies as we can. And they're doing it for us, not for them. Right? We are the ones that have skin in the game. They don't, but they care. And it's consciousness. And there's something about the beauty of human consciousness, which is when we become aware of ourselves, that I think is worth preserving and is worth fighting for. And I think that the mushrooms and the other medicines know this, and they're saying, okay, let's give these hard-headed humans another chance, because we could use the good stuff that they developed. They're better than the dinosaurs. So we let's give them a chance. Who knows? Maybe they tried with the dinosaurs as well, and the dinosaurs just didn't get it.
I love it. We have a few minutes. Khodayar, I know that you've raised your hand a few times. Do you want to share anything before we wrap up?
Thank you. I hope that what I'm saying has some merit in this discussion. But when I meditate out there with nature, it's almost as if the trees and the birds really want me to show up as the human, the truly human. They know how to do this. They know how a bird knows how to be a bird. A tree knows how to be a tree. And it seems that my learning is about how to harmonize the vibration that I carry with that of the bird, with that of the tree, with that of the earth. It's not a question of seeking a profession or a way of living or a thing in culture, although I think cultures are fine in guiding us. But there comes a point where I think we're really in this ecology, we're really called to be the human being. And to refine that is an immense responsibility. The trees really, really appreciate that. The birds appreciate that. That's the field of love that we all occupy. And the fine thing about the human being is we can learn. We can learn from them. Them, it's really us. There's really no real duality. It's really us. I don't know if I said anything worthwhile, but there you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, you're beautiful. The precious human birth, it's called by the Buddhists, right? We have something precious going on here, and we can choose, because we always have the choice to use it or waste it. And the fact that you're here makes me think that you are all committed to using, taking advantage of the precious human birth that we have. Wandrea, before we end, let me put in the chat my email address and the email address of the person that is helping me to coordinate the pilgrimage. So Sarah, if you're interested in the pilgrimage, you can reach out to Sarah. And the second one, soroka@gmail.com, that's my email in case you want to continue this conversation in any way, shape, or form. I'll be more than happy to continue it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sergio. It's always such a pleasure, such a gift. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, your heart, your stories, and this beautiful pilgrimage with this community. Thank you. Just so much gratitude, sending you positive vibes your way. And I know that I speak for everyone here that we're so grateful. Thank you all for joining us for this special Sacred Medicine series. You've got the email. I will send out the replay with these links and information. And of course, we have one more session coming up with Ken Lizra, all about ayahuasca and somatic healing. So stay tuned for that as well. Thank you, dear ones. Sending you blessings and love.
Thank you for all those hearts that I'm seeing everywhere. So thank you very much, Wandrea. Always a pleasure spending time with you and you all. And yes, let's continue the conversation.
Awesome. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Innate Vitality Code podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, rate the podcast, and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series. Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.